It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 488 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a special guest, and that's Rich Dueck, the creator of such wonderful things as Gutter Magic, Road of Bones, Sea of Sorrows, Wailing Blade, and even has a story coming in the upcoming issue of Superman Red and Blue. We talk about the various creations that he's done, both in the worlds he's made and playing in other people's sandboxes, including the Turtles, among other things. He's got a lot of interesting things to say, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy our conversation. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Rich Dueck, the creator of so many good books, and I've read several of them, but I'm sad to say I haven't read them all. There's some reading I got to be doing here. And the first one I ever read of yours was Gutter Magic, which I really enjoyed. You've also got Wailing Blade, Sea of Sorrows, which I've read, Road of Bones, which I've read. You've also been contributing in some of these short story books like All We Ever Wanted,
mm-hmm.
and some other good stuff like that. So there's, I didn't know you had done the Turtles. That was a surprise to me.
Yeah, about a few years ago.
Really? Wow. So Rich, all these kinds of good things have been going on. But, of course, I wrote a review of Gutter Magic way back when it first started out, and I loved the first issue. So I thought we'd start a little bit about there, and then we'll get to the latest one, which is a story in Superman Red and Blue.
Sure.
Which is coming out in June. So, okay. Gutter Magic I really loved because a lot of magical stories just sort of appear out of nowhere. You know, they suddenly pull a rabbit out of their hat, is the way I like to describe it. And your book doesn't do that, thankfully. I really loved the fact that it was very, you know, you didn't do anything that you didn't give us a forewarning about. And I struggled, honestly, to get the last two issues. And finally, the lady who runs the store where I buy mostly, she discovered a store that had those two and got them for me. And I got to read them. And I was so happy I got to read them. It's such an interesting book. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because was that your first book?
Yeah, that was my first book. It's not the first comic I ever wrote, but it was the first one that like I kind of went from script into getting the art done and getting it published. I think, let's see. So what happened was, when I was getting into, decided I wanted to start writing, I took a class, at this place called Comics Experience, and, the class project was a 5-page script. So I wrote a 5-page script. It was called Gutter Magic, short story. But I really liked it, and I decided I wanted to get it made. So I found an artist, I got that made, and I really liked kind of the universe. It was one that I had been kind of building for a while in my head and on paper, not really sure what I wanted to do with it. So I did write a few more short stories and got those made, and then decided that I wanted to start developing it into a full-length series. So I started doing that. I got the first issue made, and then that was all I had for a couple of years, but I had been showing it to a lot of people that I was meeting, both online and at conventions and things like that, and getting like good responses. So eventually we were able to secure a publishing deal with IDW, and then that enabled us to do the the last three issues of the series, and from there it was off to the races. Yeah, but I think one of the things with Gutter Magic, like you said, that things didn't come out of nowhere. It's because I did spend a lot of time kind of developing the world and thinking a lot about how magic would work there, and sort of building all these internal rules that maybe even if I don't address every single one of them in the story, it's like I had them in my head and knew what was going on. So I think that kind of really helped it all hang together.
It was great. Let me read the description as I see it on Comixology. Now, I think it's right now it's under Source Point Press.
Yeah.
The way it looks.
Yeah.
Let me read it. It's a paragraph here. Let me get to it. It says, in a world where the power of magic, not the atom bomb, finally settled World War II, Manhattan and the entire world as we know it is a very different place indeed. Dragons and nimble airships flit between towering skyscrapers that have become wizards' towers. Cinder Burns has been trying to lie, cheat, and steal his way into the world of wizardry his entire life, and he's finally got the key to unlocking the magical power denied to him for so long. But first, he needs to stay one step ahead of a necromantic crime lord, her gang of death-worshipping thugs, and everyone else who wants him dead. Which I enjoyed. I love the setup was really great too. That World War II was solved by magic and not by the atom bomb. It sets everything all up. It's so, you know, again, you're not making magic come out of nowhere, but you can tell that there are magical beings, people who are much more magical than others. And the Cinder Burns, who's the main character, he seems to struggle with making magic, which I loved. I thought, you know, so many times people just come out of nowhere and they're the best that's ever been, and there's no sympathy for that person. But this person I really felt a lot for. I think, you know, as far as world building and character building, I thought this was a really great, great comic.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. It's, you know, definitely one of my favorite things I've written. Working with Source Point's been great because they actually let me go. Not only did they republish the first four, they let me go back and do another four, which was kind of like a follow-up story we called Smoke and Mirrors. So that came out in issues, but that was like, it was last year, kind of during the whole time when, COVID was kind of shut down Diamond, and a lot of comic stores were shuttered. So it didn't really, I think it was like, it was pretty hard to find at the time when it was coming out. But this year, I believe we're planning on collecting it in a trade paperback. So it should be like more widely available for fans of the original series.
That'd be great, because I had the first four issues, but I want to get the collected edition of both of those, because those are great fun to have. And I want to, you know, I have a shelf where I put books that I like to pull out and read occasionally. And, you know, it's just a little longer story is fun for me. On the case. So to be able to read both of those together would be really great. But I tell you, I struggled to get it for a little while there. So I was so grateful when she came across them somewhere and she got them for me. And boy, the first thing I did when I got home, I read them. And I said, yeah, that was a great. And that's another thing I really liked about the book. It ended well. Every time I say it, it's really an interesting, smart ending is the way that I put it. It's just such a great book.
Oh, thank you.
Which leads me to ask, have you got more Gutter Magic coming in the future?
Well, I think that's a little bit up in the air now. We kind of have to see where how the new trade does and things like that. I mean, like I would happily do it. I have like a lot of stories, and like I said, I did spend a lot of time developing the setting. So I think it's the kind of thing where if someone was like, hey, we want more Gutter Magic stories, I could just keep writing them. But, you know, the realities of the industry is that, you know, I'm going to need like a publishing partner in that. Mm-hmm. Or maybe, you know, at some future point, go to Kickstarter and do it that way. But I would say, like, you know, the desire is there. I have stories planned. It's more just sort of question of the logistics of it and how we're gonna how we could get it done. So,
have you used Kickstarter before?
Yeah, a couple of times. Once with Gutter Magic, actually. I had a few short stories I wanted to write. So after the main series was out, I did like a digital Kickstarter for what I was calling Tales from the Gutter. That went really well. It was successful. And then the other book that I've done through Kickstarter is Wailing Blade. And I did that through Comics Tribe, which is they're like a smaller publisher, but then they do a lot of like, I think almost all their books now through Kickstarter because they've grown a fan base there over the years. But both, we did a Kickstarter for issue one of Wailing Blade. And then we came back and just did late last year, a Kickstarter for a hardcover edition. And both of them were really successful. I actually just got the hardcover for Wailing Blade in the mail, and it's a beautiful book. So super happy with how it turned out.
Now, Wailing Blade is like 180 degrees away from Gutter Magic. You know, I'm going to use Comixology as a reference to describe things because I think it kind of helps us understand the book. It says, Wailing Blade is a high adrenaline fantasy adventure set in the dark future of mankind. When his father is sentenced to death at the hands of the legendary head taker, Bandit Prince Tycon, am I pronouncing that right, Tycon?
Yeah, that's how I pronounce it, yeah.
Okay, must find a way to save him or fall to the Wailing Blade himself. And you had four issues of it, and it's great fun. I have to say that the action and adventure and stuff, because, you know, Gutter Magic isn't so much an adventure story as it is a dramatic story. Mm-hmm. There are things that happen in it, but it's not like Wailing Blade. Wailing Blade is punching and kicking and running and jumping.
Oh, yeah. A lot of, like, fighting. And, like, Gutter Magic, there's a lot more kind of, like, subterfuge, investigation, like kind of running around a city. Like Wailing Blade is very much like almost like a love letter to like Conan or He-Man or something like that. You know, like there's a lot of like roots in like sword and sorcery and weird science fiction that I enjoyed. You know, a lot of stuff from like the 60s and 70s, like pulp era of like sword and sorcery and sci-fi. So different book, but also like one that I took a lot of time with the world building. Like I made a map for it, like the type you would find like if you're opening up like Lord of the Rings or another like fantasy novel. One of the things I always loved about those books was that they came with a map. Like, you know, I would reference the map while I was reading, but also there would be times when I would just look at the map itself and think about like, wonder about like what all the different places were. Cause you know, it was like a map of the world, but the story was only taking part like in, you know, a small part of it. And I wanted people when they're reading Wailing Blade to have a similar thing, like where they could like look at a map and just sort of, not only get an idea for where things were, but also just kind of wonder at that wide world and what was going on in it.
Gosh, the blade is huge.
Yeah. It's very much like inspired by kind of like weapons you'd see in like anime or manga or stuff like that. Like the funny thing is we actually had a prop made to take around to conventions and comic store signings. Mm-hmm. And the prop guy, I commissioned it and I thought he was going to be making it out of foam. But he's like, yeah, I think I'm going to use like wood. Is that cool? And in my head, I'm thinking, oh, he must mean since it's so big, he wants to reinforce the foam with wood. So I was like, yeah, no problem. This thing comes in the mail and it's solid wood.
Oh,
and it was so heavy that like Joe, my, the artist, we were just like sick of like lugging it around. But the funny thing is that it just sort of confirmed to us that like this would never like really work in real life. Like we're just thinking like you'd have to be superhuman to be able to fight with this thing. But I just think it just makes it that much cooler. Just it's definitely huge. It lets out this big wailing sound when it's being used in a fight. It's just that book I had a lot of fun doing, and hopefully another one will come back to in the future.
Because, you know, I way back when I first started going to conventions, there was a guy that made Thor's hammer, and he made it completely out of metal.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd walk around and carry it around the convention. And he'd say, "Do you want to try to hold it?" And when he came, I said to him, "Well, I'll try." And luckily, he did not completely let go, because I started to crumble underneath it, and he picked it back up, and I was like, "Okay," I said, "That's I guess I wasn't worthy," you know, kind of stuff. But it's just wild how those things go. It's just such a fun.
Yeah,
you know, it's amazing to see something in real life, and then you really appreciate how this works in the comics.
Yeah,
it's great stuff. So well, because so you did say you're thinking about some more.
Yeah, because that's another like story. I think that it's got a lot of great characters and a lot of great ones that we have in mind that we haven't even really a couple we've like introduced or only touched on, and then there's others that Joe and I were talking about that we haven't even introduced yet. So I think we've got plenty more stories to tell in that universe. Again, it's just going to be a little time before we're able to get back there, but we definitely plan to.
Now, one of the reasons I'm spending some time on your previous stuff is because I don't think we want to spoil the Superman Red and Blue. We'll talk a little bit about that, but I think it'd be good to spend some time talking about the stuff that leads up to that.
Sure, yeah.
That's good stuff.
It's been a journey.
Now, you did two horror books, two horror stories that got me. One I have finished and the other I have not. The Road of Bones I read. Sea of Sorrows I started, but I haven't quite finished it yet. Unfortunately, my stack of reading materials is as tall as I am, and unfortunately, I haven't gotten to everything yet. But I did read Road of Bones, which, gosh, it's got a long paragraph. I probably shouldn't read the whole thing, but I'll read a little bit of it. It says, horror, history, and Russian folklore collide in this brutal survival tale where the worst prison in the world is merely the gateway to even darker terrors.
Mm-hmm.
And we see one of the guys. I think the Roman Morozov is the name of the guy.
Yeah.
And they several of them escape, and then things don't go all that well.
Yeah, I mean, it's three guys who escape the Russian gulag into the middle of Siberia, which is one of the most deadly and coldest climates on Earth, and it's a rushed escape. So they don't have enough food, and it's these three guys and they're out there and the food is dwindling. And one guy is, Roman keeps having these hallucinations or visitations. Like we're not really clear whether it's an actual supernatural creature visiting him or if it's just sort of like a manifestation of his, is he going insane? We don't know. But it basically just comes down to what these guys are going to do to survive. And are all of them going to walk out of Siberia or not?
And we won't spoil that.
Yeah.
It's the one thing that book did to me was it made me put a sweater on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a book where like you're looking at these snowy landscapes, and there's a lot of them because, I mean, Siberia is huge. So we really wanted to give the sense of like, you spend like hours or days climbing a snowy mountain, and your only reward is to see the next five mountains in front of you that you're going to have to make it over. So, but yeah, Alex did an amazing job. I think, Alex Cormack, the artist, with just getting across that feeling of like, cold and like it, you can almost feel it, like the chill in your bones on some of those pages.
Oh, but on the other hand, I could not put it down. Even though I was cold as could be, I had to keep reading to find out what was going to happen next. And it ends interestingly. I do have to say that's got a really interesting ending.
Yeah. And the ending is, you know, I think we really like the ending too. And that's why when we were thinking of Sea of Sorrows, you know, like, we knew we wanted to do another horror series together, but we didn't really want to do like Road of Bones 2, like, you know, the next day or pick up with these characters like 10 years down the road or something like that. Because we really liked the way it ended. So we kind of just went back and we were like, well, you know, what did we love about making this? What were people telling us they liked about it? And I think like one of the things that, one of the threads that, we were hearing and also thinking was that, you know, there's this really interesting interplay between, like a real historical event that was horrific. A supernatural element and also just exploring something horrific about the human psyche when it's pushed to certain extremes. Mm-hmm. So we love the way those different elements of horror played together. And we approached Sea of Sorrows as finding another kind of point in history where we could explore similar themes. Mm-hmm. And, while still doing something new. So it didn't feel like we were just kind of going over the same ground over and over again. So, mm-hmm. So for Sea of Sorrows, we settled on the post World War I era, like in between mm-hmm. the two world wars. And mm-hmm. we had salvage crew, going out into the North Atlantic in search of a sunken U-boat full of gold. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they encounter a supernatural sea siren that mm-hmm. complicates things, but it's like, mm-hmm. you know, what's more dangerous? Is it this siren trying to lure them to their deaths, or is it their greed over the gold and, you know, the infighting over that? So, you know, that was just, that's what we were trying to do was sort of find another, I guess you could call it like point in time where we could explore another like gripping psychological supernatural horror story with a historical element to it.
Yeah, this one, I like I said, I haven't finished this one yet. I read the first two issues, but I haven't read the last three. And some of the stuff that got me, I had a brother-in-law who used to go on a submarine, mm-hmm. and I saw it one time. I couldn't go in it, but I looked at it and I thought, man, if you're completely shut in this thing and you can't go anywhere and you're underneath the tons of water and stuff like that, that was I don't think I want to do that. I just don't. And that's the whole thing. One of the things too that got me was you mentioned it, and I was going to mention it unless you did, the siren mm-hmm. really got me. Wow, that is scary stuff, the way that's done. I really... Oh, yeah.
Well, if you haven't read the last three issues yet, just wait, because there's plenty of surprises in store for you with that young lady.
Oh, boy. I can't wait to see that, because yeah. She is creepy.
Yeah, she really is, and things take a turn in issue four and continue to go off the rails. But like you mentioned, like the tight spaces in the submarine, and that's another thing like Alex brought up in when we've talked about it too with people, is that, you know, the thing that fascinated him about drawing underwater and the thing he wanted to capture was the fact that like it is claustrophobic, but it's open for like miles around you. Like when you're in one of those diving suits, it's like you're shoved in one of these suits and there's this whole world going on around you, but you only really see what your light can illuminate. So it's like, you don't know, there might be like a giant shark right next to you and you would never know because your light's not shining on it. And it's funny how like well the books work together, because Road of Bones is very white because it takes place in you know, a snowy region, and so much of Sea of Sorrows takes place underwater or below decks of the ship that it's a very black book. Like the color black is like dominant throughout the whole thing. So
yeah.
So yeah, they just work really well together, I think.
I just don't know which was scarier to me. I was looking at it, I'm going like, I don't know. I, because both of them were really terrifying to me. I just kind of was like, I don't know. Of course, I haven't read the end of this Sea of Sorrows yet, so I may change my mind when I get there. But wow, it's just it's interesting though that the Sea of Sorrows, a lot of the times the water looks a little space-like.
Yeah, yeah, it's almost like outer space because, you know, you've got this black space, and then, you know, the divers are breathing. So Alex draws a lot of bubbles, you know, to represent that, and they almost take on like a star-like quality, you know.
Mm-hmm. Then there's this creepy cover on issue 2.
Yeah.
Oh, with that undersea outfit. And then what do you see inside of it? Not a person's face, but a skull.
Yeah.
Ooh, that got me. So those are, I mean, do you like horror pretty much? Because those are two of your, I think, strongest books were those ones.
Yeah. I mean, I do. And I it's funny because I never really pictured myself writing horror until very recently. Like, I like horror. I've liked horror for, you know, a long time, but I just never really kind of thought of it as something I was like dying to explore as a writer. But what happened was I was doing some research into Prison Breaks, because I had like a vague idea for a science fiction story I wanted to do that had a prison break, and I started reading about the Gulag and just realizing that this was kind of a piece of history that I really wasn't familiar with. So I just dug more and more into it. And the more I dug, the more I was like, you know, I think there's a really great potential for a story here. And I don't think I've ever read one quite like it. So I was like, forget the science fiction element. What about, what if I just make it a historical story? What if really lean into the horror of this and see how it goes? And, you know, when I started writing it, I wasn't even sure if it would work or if I could pull it off. But the more I did it, the more I got into it and the more I enjoyed it. And then, and now it's something I really like I can see myself not abandoning, science fiction or fantasy or any of the other genres I like to work in, but definitely it's going to be part of my career going forward is writing more horror stories.
Well, you certainly do it well.
Thank you.
Yikes. Cause, oh gosh. Some of your books I think are perfect reading for like Halloween.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, cause definitely. That's when I read Road of Bones, actually, was right around Halloween.
Oh, perfect.
And I just was like, you know, and of course, I live in Florida, but here I was with a sweater on, you know, like I said. And everybody's going, why are you wearing a sweater? It's 80 degrees outside because it's cold in here. That's why. Because and you know, this with the CSR, I was like, I got to get to that. That's something. I got to pull that aside and finish those up because, boy, those are really going to be good. Now, one of the things that you've also done, because this is the Superman Red and Blue we're going to get to, is that you tend to write stories that are part of collections.
Yeah.
Stuff. Is that why? Because not everybody likes to do that. Is that something? Do you like writing shorter stories? Because, like, for example, Sea of Sorrows is like, what, 5 issues?
Mm-hmm.
So is it a good change of pace for you to write shorter stories?
Yeah, I do like writing shorter stories. Not, you know, obviously not like to the exclusion of longer ones, but I think it's a good way to, you know, both try new things and also explore some stories that I might not have gotten to write in another way, you know? And the other thing is not every story idea that I have, like, is complex enough or deep enough to, you know, support like a 5-issue or 4-issue series. You know, some of them are, have like kind of like a simpler premise and, you know, or just like get it done in 4 pages, 8 pages, however many it is. And like I said, it's a nice change of pace or change of genre. Like All We Ever Wanted, which I did a story for, I think it was 2019. You know, the theme of that was, you could call it like positive futurism. Like, you know, the idea was that it was a reaction to a lot of like dystopian fiction, like cyberpunk stuff, or like a lot of stories where like the future is just garbage. You know, the question that the anthology was asking was, what about a better future? What are some interesting stories we could tell in a future where things have gotten better? And that was an interesting thing to think about, you know? So it did make me kind of think about a story that would fit there that, you know, I might not have come to on my own, through my own devices. So yeah, I think anthology work is great. Yeah, I love doing it. So
do you remember what the story was that you wrote for that?
Yes, it was called Gaia, and it was about in the future we are on kind of like a post-apocalyptic type of Earth. So like basically like at a certain point in the past, things got so bad on Earth that basically everyone who was able to leave did. And Earth was just very in a bad place environmentally. And, you know, but some people stayed behind and managed to bring the planet back to a place of beauty and a place where nature thrived. And now we're like kind of like thousands of years later, and some of those elements of groups that left have come back looking to reclaim Earth for themselves. Like, you know, they kind of see it as their legacy or something to be exploited. And these people that are left don't want them to happen. And I realize that sounds like there's a lot going on, and there kind of is in the background, but it's like, you know, the story we're telling is basically like 5 pages. And we did get it done, I think, in a nice way.
Cool. Very cool. Cause, I remember the book. I talked with Tyler about that book, and I read them, and I didn't remember which one you had done. So that brings it back to memory now. That was a great story. Good stuff. What about Scamthology? You talked about Comics Tribe.
Sure.
Apparently you did one in there, and it says the basic summary is pretty easy. It says, imagine you had superpowers in Vegas.
Yeah.
What was your story there?
So Scam is the brainchild of my friend Joe Mulvey, who the artist I did Wailing Blade with, and like the story that he told, I think it was like a 4-issue series initially, and it was basically Ocean's 11. If imagine Ocean's 11 if the gang had superpowers. So we had all these like fun and wild characters, and he was looking for some stories to kind of fill out this Ultimate Edition Scamthology that he was doing, where the book would have the entire series and then some of these side stories. So I was just looking through the book and reading some of the characters. And one of, I forget the name, you have to forgive me because it was about like 8 or 9 years ago that I wrote it. But one of the characters, she was invulnerable. Like, you know, like she could take bullets and, you know, whatever without getting hurt. So the story is basically me thinking like, well, what would an invulnerable person, what's a fun story we could tell with her turning to a life of crime? So I was thinking the story is basically she's with a gang of thieves robbing a bank, and they double cross her, not realizing that she, you know, they actually can't kill her, and she gets her revenge on them. But that was a fun story. I got to work with Joe Eisma on that. He's a great artist. At the time, he was doing Morning Glories, which was one of my favorite books. So that was like a real like thrill to do.
Cool. Very cool. As we're proving right now, you are really good at world building and creating of new characters. But I guess we'll wrap up by talking about the fact that every once in a while you go and get into established characters. Like we mentioned Turtles, and we'll get to Superman in a second. But how did you end up writing for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? That doesn't sound like something that's in your normal wheelhouse.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of funny. I guess it's because Gutter Magic landed at IDW, which holds the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles license. So so when we landed at IDW, we were assigned an editor, Bobby Curno. He's a great editor, great writer in his own right, and also happens to edit the entire Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles line. So I got to know Bobby working on Gutter Magic, and then when it was finished, TMNT at the time, they had the main book, but then they also were doing, you know, a few mini series here and there, and also had a secondary book called TMNT Universe, which was kind of the goal of that was to explore maybe some lesser known characters, some characters that might have had small roles in the main storyline, just kind of like fleshing them out a little bit. So when we were done with Gutter Magic, I hit up Bobby and I was just like, hey, you know, if there's anything you ever need or any opportunities that where I could, you know, pitch a story to you for anything you're working on, I'd love to. And he just said, well, we happen to be looking for some stories for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles universe. So if you have any, send them my way. So, you know, yeah, I mean, it took some time, thought about it, read a lot of the books and a lot of the ones that, you know, some of the side stuff that I missed. And I saw some characters that I thought I could tell like a fun story with. It's funny because I wrote in the TMNT universe, but I didn't actually get to write any of the actual Turtles. The teams that I wrote were this team called the Mighty Mutanimals, which are kind of like a more, kind of like a motley crew of misfits, you know, all kinds of different animals. But it was still a lot of fun to do. So I got to do one issue. I think it was issue 11, and that entire one was all me. And then I got to do a couple of, backup stories and later issues, I think, in the 20s, it might've been like 23 and 24 that I have short five page backup stories in. And again, they were a lot of fun. I mean, like the issue is like the first time I had ever written something with, you know, characters that weren't my own. And also my first time learning, you know, when you're writing something that's part of like a larger universe, you have to keep things in mind, like continuity and which characters are where and which characters you can use, which ones you can't. You know, in the case of TMNT, everything also needed to be approved not only by IDW, but by Nickelodeon, who was licensing it out to them. So that was a great learning experience. And then for the backups, I again, like, you know, short stories, so I got to have like a little more fun and do things that were a little bit out of my wheelhouse. Like, one of the short stories, five pagers, called like Life at Sea, and it's totally ridiculous. It's there's this character called Pigeon Pete, who is like, a little bit not all there, mentally. So, you know, the whole story is him kind of imagining the characters from the Turtle setting in like as like pirates, like in a, you know, basically like a almost like a pirate musical. And it's just like a fantasy in his head. But I just had a lot of fun writing it. And a funny story about that is I have a son who's in kindergarten, and a lot of the kindergartners really like comics, and the teacher knew I wrote comics. And she's like, are there any comics that you can read to the class? And I'm looking through my work and I'm like, well, I can't read them Road of Bones. No. I can't read them Theosaurus. I can't read them Wailing Blade. I was like, but you know what? This funny little one-off story, like I read through it a couple of times just to make sure there wasn't anything like inappropriate in it, and there wasn't. And it was like very lighthearted and very fun. And I read it to the class and they loved it. So it was, you know, it was just, you know, that I think that, like, just to go back to what we were talking about, you know, short stories giving an opportunity to kind of do things you wouldn't normally do, you know, mm-hmm. and it was great.
It's interesting. That must have been a challenge of sorts, though, to where you are the one developing the world. Suddenly you go into a pre-established world.
Yeah.
You were talking a little bit about it. Did you find that difficult to do, or was that just flex different muscles? How did that work?
I think once we found an idea that we wanted to do, it wasn't difficult. I think the difficult part was finding that idea, because, you know, it's not like I just said, here's the story I want to do. And Bobby said, yeah, let's do it. Bobby was like, send me ideas. So I sent him like maybe 4 or 5 ideas, not like fully fleshed out, but like, you know, just like a paragraph, just summing up what it was. And he might be like, there were some he just didn't like, but then there were ones where he was like, I like this, but we can't do it because this character is in Japan right now. And we're not planning to bring them back for another 20 issues. This one, these guys we have a mini series coming out with them, and we don't want to overexpose them. So they're off the table too. So, you know, there was a little bit of that back and forth, like trying to find something that would fit in the continuity. And that was also interesting to both of us. And then also, just getting a feel for like kind of what they were looking for. So yeah, it was a process, but I wouldn't call it like difficult necessarily.
Well, the reason I asked that is because now you're getting in, you've got a story coming out from a character that is extremely well established, and
yeah,
doing a Superman Red and Blue, which is coming out June 15th, according to Comixology.
Yep.
And you got a story in there. So why don't you talk a little bit about what the story's about?
Sure. So the story is, I don't want to spoil too much, but basically it's about a Superman winds up saving a social media star, like a YouTuber, and it winds up, the act of saving him winds up making his life a lot more difficult over the next few days. So you're just like, yeah, that's a good like place to leave it. But I had a great time writing it. You know, it was an 8-page story, so you know it's not like I was going to you know, write some galaxy spanning saga or, you know, something like that. But what it was a great opportunity, not only because it was a short, but also because the stories in Superman Red and Blue are not like in continuity stories. So mm-hmm. I didn't have to really worry about where things currently stand in the DC universe. So I was really able to just give my take on Superman, like what do I love about him, what draws me to him as a character, why he's one of my favorite superheroes, and really just do that without anybody sort of saying, no, you can't do that, or that's not what Superman's like anymore, or things like that. And I got, I was really, I feel super lucky to be paired with Joe Quinones, who's an amazing artist. You know, he's done so much great work, and he also really was able to capture kind of the essence of the Superman that I had in my head. I think we both kind of have a similar approach to the character, similar things we love. You know, like just to be perfectly transparent about the influences, like a lot of it is inspired by like Christopher Reeve's performance and, you know, in Superman 78 and Superman 2, like those movies. You know, it's not like he didn't draw Christopher Reeve, but I think like the Superman he drew and the Superman I was writing, it's like, it's not the same character, but there's certain things that are kind of cut from that cloth. And, you know, I think he was just like a perfect fit for it. Cause like he's doing a follow-up comic to Tim Burton's Batman. So he really kind of can take a lot of those, I guess you could call them like retro elements, and kind of like update them and bring them into, you know, a great looking like book that doesn't, and not have it feel like old fashioned or stale. And, I think it was just a great pairing, and I'm super, super happy with how it came out.
Cool. Because, you know, I often ask people, and I had a chance to talk to Philip Kennedy Johnson before he started doing it for DC this year. And he talked about how heroic he wanted Superman to be, you know, larger than life kind of stuff. But I think sometimes writing Superman is a challenge because he's so moral. I mean, we have a fair idea what he's going to do every time. You know, Batman, on the other hand, is not nearly as moral, shall we say.
Yeah.
And you're not sure exactly what he's going to do. But with Superman, you pretty much have a fair idea what he's going to do as far as that goes. Did you find that a challenge when you were writing this story? How did that influence you?
I think for me, one of the things that I love about Superman is that, you know, you're saying like, you know, you always know what he's going to do, which is like, you always know that he's going to do the right thing, you know? And I think for me, that's really kind of inspiring and really, really what one of the things that I love the most about him is that, you know, he's a guy, he can't really have a bad day. You know what I mean? Like if he has a bad day, a lot of people would get hurt. You know what I mean? I think one of the things that we've seen over the years are a lot of attempts to sort of deconstruct Superman and think of like, what would Superman be like in the real world, confronted with real world problems? And for me, the answer is really easy, is because he'd be Homelander from The Boys, or, you know, any of it's like if Superman really gave into all his power, he would be a monster or a dictator or something like that. And I think the amazing thing about Superman is that he has enough power to basically do anything he wants, yet he chooses to use it in such a way to benefit mankind. You know, and I do touch on that in my story, is that, like, you know, he can punch anybody out. He can burn a hole through them with his heat vision. He could, you know, he can do all these things, but he can't like really force people to do the right thing. You know, like he can't force anyone to to be better, all he can really do is try to lead by example. And I think that's a powerful thing. And I think it's the sort of thing that a lot of people think of as kind of like corny about Superman sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, oh, it's the Boy Scout. But I mean, I think that's kind of what I love about him is that, you know, he doesn't just like, you know, kill Lex Luthor with a flick of his thumb, because he could. Mm-hmm. He could. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's all he'd really need to do is just flick, and Lex would be done, and there would be an end to all the world dominating, universe destroying plots that Lex has come up with. But he's not going to do that, because he knows that if he does that, he starts down the path of, like, he basically has to become like, he's going to have to do that to everyone. You know what I mean? And where do you draw the line? That's number mm-hmm. one. But then also there's a part of him that really believes that, if he could just get through to Lex in some way, you know, Lex might be able to turn his genius, for good, you know? So I think just those things are what really inspire me, about Superman as a character. And I think the great thing about having this be the Superman story I got to work on was that I was really able to, like, kind of explore that in a very free way without, you know, saying, all right, well, this is what I want to do, but, you know, there wasn't an issue 20 years ago where Jimmy Olsen said this, and it was pre-crisis, but still might be, it's complicated. And I don't envy us, you know, the editors of, Superman books or the writers that kind of have to go through all these things. I mean, I would love to do it myself, and I'll happily, like, do all the research I need to do, if that ever happens. But I think the freeing part of this was just being able to tell a pure story, you know, like, just like, this is how I see the guy. This is what I love about him. And I hope you do too.
Hmm. So it sounds like you'd like to write more Superman.
Oh yeah. In a heartbeat. yeah. You know, there's a lot of characters, like, at Marvel and DC, both, that I would love to work on. But I, you know, like, Superman has always had a kind of special place in my heart. So it's really amazing that I got to write him. Like, there's a lot of superheroes I like. There's only one superhero shirt that I own, and it's like a blue one with an S on it. you can bet I'll be wearing it when I go to pick the issue up at my comic store. So,
Oh boy. It sounds like fun. It's interesting, because when I talk with people about Superman, it's always interesting. The people that really love him look at him as an inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting. People that don't like him look at him like, you hit some of the things that they talk. He's a Boy Scout. He's this, he's that, and the other. But I think when people look past all that and actually see Superman for, like, as you see him, I think that people would get a really interesting, I think you'd find Superman a lot more interesting than they do. Yeah. I think so. So it's really good. Now, this, of course, is going to, again, coming out on June 15, and Superman Red and Blue, number 4.
Yep.
So make sure that you get that one, because it's going to be in there, and it's going to be great fun to do it. Well, hopefully they'll ask you. I haven't heard that this is coming to an end. I don't know, maybe you know more than I do about it, but yeah, if they want you to come back and do another one, that would be fun to read too, I think.
Well, I believe it. I don't know about ending or whatever, but I know that it's planned to be 6 issues and then collected into, like, a volume. So it might be like they'll do a volume 1 and then do a volume 2 down the road. I don't know. But we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens.
They're doing Batman Black and White again. They do that every so often.
Yeah.
Maybe Superman Red and Blue would be like that. They're doing Wonder Woman Black and Gold or something, somebody was telling me.
Yeah, they're doing Wonder Woman Black and Gold. They did Harley Quinn Black, White, and Red.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Marvel got in on it too. They did Wolverine Black, White, and Blood and Carnage. So, yeah.
And, that's great.
Yep.
You've got to be a part of it, and that's an important thing. I guess if that day that teacher ever invites you back, you'll have another story you can.
Yeah. I think this one would be pretty appropriate. So,
very good. Are there other projects you're working on that we should be aware of?
Let's see. I have a. I don't know if you're familiar with Razor Blades. It's a horror comics magazine put out by James Tynion IV. Independently, it's just sort of like a horror showcase, like, again, and a lot of like short stories and essays about horror and things like that. I have a short story in the next issue, which I think is going to be issue 4, should be out fairly soon. And then I do have other stuff I'm working on, but I'm not really at liberty to say what it is. So,
okay.
Yeah. But you're going to be seeing more from me, hopefully, towards the end of this year and definitely next year. So,
great.
Yeah.
Sounds great. Cause is that more horror? Is that what the,
couple of horror projects. Yeah. A couple of, you know, and some other stuff that I'm, you know, there's stuff that I know is definitely happening. There's stuff that I am still in the process of working out, you know, pitching it and things like that. So,
very cool.
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere. So,
Good. Because I was looking through Comixology, there was a bunch of stuff that was there from you, and I was like, wow, some of the stuff I haven't read yet, I got to be sure to get catch up on these because I haven't quite followed. That's one of the problems I have with people who write for multiple companies. It's hard sometimes to track it all down. But in some ways, that Comixology is helpful with that because I can say, "Oh, he did that. Okay, I can download it, buy it, and download it, and then read it, and then go looking for the paper copies to keep because really good stuff. So yeah, it's really great stuff. Now, if people want to follow you on social media, how do they do that?
I am on Twitter and Instagram both at @rdouek. So it's @RDOUEK. And those are the places where I'm most active. I'm a little more active on Twitter than I am on Instagram. That's because I'm a writer and I'm more apt to type something out than have images to post. But I am on both. I also have a website, rduek.com, that I have a newsletter on that you could sign up for if you want to get semi-regular updates about what I'm working on and also just some insights into like maybe how I work or you know, thoughts about the comics industry and writing and stuff like that.
Cool.
Yeah. And that's probably the best places to do. I have like a page on Facebook called, I think it's Rich Dueck Author, but I don't really use it all that much. I'm much more on Twitter.
Okay, well, you know, if I see your name on a book, and sometimes I don't see them all, that's why I don't have them all, but I buy it because I know I'm going to get a good story. And I love your world building, and I love your ability to, you know, build characters to ones that I haven't seen many times. I love that because I've been reading comics for a long time, and when somebody can surprise me and intrigue me like you do, I think that's a wonderful thing. So all I can say is, Rich, I hope you keep it up and keep making comics for a long time to come.
Thanks, man. Really appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
And that-
that's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.